Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Today on Truth and Movies, Armando Iannucci swaps Veep for Victorian literature in the Dickens adaptation The Personal History of David Copperfield.
This narrative is far more than mere fiction.
Are you David Copperfield?
I am indeed.
It is the true story of the life I was about to lead.
Daniel Kaluuya and newcomer Jodie Turner-Smith are on the run in the stylish road movie Queen and Slim.
It was self-defense.
We're in the Black Bonnie and Clyde.
In the city, breaking and everybody shaking up.
How are you gonna outrun the police?
We don't have to outrun them. We just have to make sure they don't know where we are.
And in Film Club, we scale the psychedelic heights of Alejandro Jodorowsky's The Holy Mountain.
Nothing in your education or experience can have prepared you for this film. Alejandro Jodorowsky's The Holy Mountain.
All coming up on Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Hello there, movie truthers. It's Michael Leader here in the host chair this week, sitting across from Campbell A. Campbell.
Hello.
Welcome back, Cam. And a newcomer this week, Layla Latif. Welcome.
Hi.
So, Layla, would you mind introducing yourself to us? Where might we have read your stuff? Or?
So you can find me occasionally popping up in Little White Lies, and I've written about films and race and kind of where that overlaps in The Guardian. And I am a regular contributor on also the food journalism scene. So if you need a restaurant recommendation, I am your gal.
Oh, I'm going to grill you about that off mic. And that was an unintentional pun.
It was good.
So we're easing you in with The Holy Mountain Film Club this week. We'll have to come back later and see what you made of that. But before we get on with the new releases, we do have some business. Up first, the podcast team for Truth and Movies are going on a road trip. We're going to Rotterdam this week to the film festival out there that's running 22nd of January to 2nd of February. We're going over, we're going to record some special episodes, maybe do some interviews as well. It's going to be me, David Jenkins, and Elena Lazic. Rotterdam is one of the best festivals in the world. It's huge, it's sprawling, it's one that people come back with all sorts of discoveries from. Their main competition is the Tiger competition, which is mainly about highlighting first and second time feature filmmakers, so there's all sorts of discoveries that you can make there. It's funny that it happens at the same time as Sundance, but if Sundance is the next big American indie hit, these are the world cinema champs. But then this sprawling program has all sorts of delights in it. You may be going to see a six-hour-long essay film. You can go and see some multimedia installations set in the far distant future at an esports Olympics. There's one I was reading about. But two screening events that I've seen that really jumped out at me. They're having a focus on Howard Shore, the composer who's there this year. They're doing a live score screening of Crash, the David Cronenberg film, with Howard Shore's score clearly being highlighted there. They also have Bong Joon-ho, Man of the Moment, out there doing a masterclass. And to mark the occasion, they're doing a special screening of Parasite in black and white, which is an artistic choice. I'd like to see it. I'd love to see that film again on the big screen. And if Bong's there, incredible.
I mean, anything for director Bong.
Exactly. But yes, listeners, look out for those special episodes that will be landing in your podcast feeds over the coming days from Rotterdam. We have one more order of business before we go into the new releases. Last week in Film Club, we talked about Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven, and you may remember that David Jenkins well, there's no way of putting it, went off on one about the narrative contrivance about the main characters pretending to be brother and sister rather than husband or wife or lovers. Well, we got an email here from Heather Wall, who actually is the producer of this very podcast. She's schooling us here. Heather took exception a little bit with David's rants and said maybe there's a reference here to the Bible, of course, Terence Malick being quite a Bible fan in a way. She says if you Google Terence Malick, Days of Heaven, Abraham, you can see that there's a theory out there online that maybe that relationship between the main characters in Days of Heaven is a reference to the story of Abraham in the Bible. So if you're interested in going down that rabbit hole, maybe David could learn a few things if you follow that Google link. Anyway, we should get on with this week's new releases. Up first, we have Armando Iannucci tackling Dickens in the personal history of David Copperfield. Armando Iannucci brings to life one of Charles Dickens' most cherished characters in the personal history of David Copperfield. From birth to infancy, from adolescence to adulthood, the good-hearted David Copperfield is surrounded by kindness, wickedness, poverty and wealth as he meets an array of remarkable characters in Victorian England.
This narrative is far more than mere fiction.
Are you David Copperfield?
I am indeed.
It is the true story of the life I was about to lead.
Your mama is ill.
How old is she?
Very ill.
Dangerously ill.
She's dead.
We're very sorry.
I can easily recall people of strong character.
Good morning!
Good morning.
Is it too early for sherry?
A little early.
It's never too early for sherry, is it? So, Layla, Armando Iannucci is mainly known for his TV and film work in satirical comedy. His last feature film was Death of Stalin. Of course, in TV, he has In the Loop, The Thick of It, and Veep. This is a bit of a departure for him, right?
Yeah, I mean, he has done some BBC programmes kind of espousing his absolute adoration of Dickens before, which I have seen. And that was one of the reasons I felt slightly wary coming into this.
Right.
I'm not a huge period drama person, and coming into this, like, there was, I wasn't particularly thrilled to see, like, a love letter to David Copperfield. And also, you know, as much as we admire a lot of Armando Iannucci's work, he's not particularly known for diversity. So, even something like Veep is a little less diverse than it could have been. And In the Loop and In the Thick of It are not exactly known for their kind of cosmopolitan casting. However, I actually felt that the colourblind casting worked perfectly well. It's sort of something that's often employed on the stage. There's a few other flourishes with casting that, you know, people's ages often don't really make sense in this film.
Right.
You have a couple of characters that play more than one role. And so it does just kind of speak to that sort of modern theatre production thing. And as soon as you sort of settle into it, it's kind of instantly forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of safe in his hands that he's not kind of doing anything, you know, just for like stunt casting or anything like slightly grubby or ill-advised. I loved it.
Right.
I thought it had this like really sweet whimsical tone with sort of this like lovely bits of like Monty Python surrealism that come in. Like you actually have a little hand coming through the roof. You have like little silent film interludes. You have kind of absurd things that don't really make sense. It has this sort of lovely British warm heart that reminded me a little bit of Paddington 2.
Mm.
I just kind of wanted to curl up on a sofa at Christmas time and kind of watch it with the whole family. I thought it was great. He sort of filters out a lot of the grimness of the actual kind of source material, and he's papered over some of the kind of slightly more depressing parts and just kind of really elevated a lot of the comedy. Tilda Swinton attacking a donkey is something I could watch 1,000 more times. Ben Whishaw as Uriah Heep, like he kind of really goes into this like slimy, obsequious, kind of gross, overly humble character and like makes him at times a little heartbreaking, but like genuinely hilarious. I mean, him and his mother talking about heavy cakes was delightful. And even something like Peter Capaldi's character, where on paper it is pretty grim because he's like slowly losing his money and by the end he's sort of, you know, living on the streets. It's all quite jolly and fun. I mean, when his like when his possessions are taken by the bailiff, that sort of is one of the more amusing moments of the film. And Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Mm. And even as someone who doesn't particularly rate Dev Patel, I thought he was perfect.
Right.
He's sort of this like open faced, smiley, long limbed kind of human Muppet that kind of you can very convincingly believe is about 11 at points and 30 at others. Like, yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised by this film.
If we stick with Dev for a second, there has been some talk about this colorblind casting, Dev Patel playing David Copperfield. What effect does that give, and is it really as big a deal as we think?
Well, I think from quite early on, I felt that he was telling us to just forget about it. Mm-hmm. This is not going to make sense. We've got to have people's races will not add up. At first, I thought maybe his late father was supposed to be Indian, but then that quickly becomes apparent that they're just not doing it. So you do have to kind of take it on good faith that he means nothing by Dev Patel's race, and you are just entirely supposed to kind of put it to one side.
Yeah. So, Campbell, what do you make of Dave Copperfield?
I was going to say about it being this very sincere and often jovial film, even at its saddest points. It came as a surprise to me because it's not like Iannucci is known for being particularly warm and fuzzy. When his last film, The Death of Stalin, basically took all of its grimmest elements and just sharpened it to a point. And it's having this main character sort of ping pong back and forth between poverty and wealth and back again. And he sort of takes it all in his stride. So I thought it was very interesting for him to sort of suddenly completely work against type and have this very pleasant, earnest film. As for the colorblind casting, I've been thinking a lot about it in relation to a lot of demand that I've seen of Greta Gerwig's Little Women, where people were sort of suggesting the same approach be taken to maybe like the March Sisters, where I don't think that would work for that film in particular, because that's a film that's kind of ostensibly about their whiteness. Here it's more focused on this sort of upstairs downstairs dynamic and these different class politics, more so than I've never read David Copperfield, so I can't say how much race plays into that dynamic in the book or at all. It just worked, I think, especially with the inconsistencies that it creates. And you've got this character telling you up front that this is a true story, like this is a story of my life, and it sort of gives you this slight remove from whether or not that's true, which an element I kind of enjoyed. Though I'm not sure whether or not that is the point of that. It's a sort of side effect that I came to enjoy, the sort of unreliable, unstable element of that.
Talking about this film reminds me of the conversation we had around this table with other guests at the time about The Day Shall Come, the Chris Morris film. Chris Morris and Mario Nucci, of course, worked together in television in the 90s on The Day Today, and they were seen at the time as the two great satirists of British comedy. And it's very marked that Armando, at this time where we always need satirists most, some would say, is going into the past, going into literary adaptations. Do you think there's something we can glean from this about today's Britain, Leila? Or is that not the point? Is there something else we're taking from it?
Well, I mean, I thought of not hugely. I kind of felt it more was something that might kind of bring us together, because I felt that this was actually quite a celebration of Britishness, and both kind of modern Britishness and kind of British kind of literary traditions. It's a very small and personal story. I mean, the kind of politics of it all don't really come into it. We've got some kind of slight class structures, but people are sort of more painted to be like responsible for their own circumstances. There's no like greater kind of speaking to like the systems in place that are making this person in debt.
It's all very fluid, because these people like move between these different spaces rather than being deeply entrenched in them. I'd say the only rigid difference is the mannerisms of like some people, like the sort of I can't remember the name of the prep school, but the friends that Copperfield makes, who like always see him as this lower class person, but otherwise most of the cast actually moves like very readily between like different spaces. Well, they might like gripe about it, but it's not something that is set in stone at any point. So I think you're right that there's no defined kind of class, no real like defined class structure to it.
Really. And it does seem that even the sort of like more tragically poor people, it's a little bit portrayed that that is sort of them that has created that. Like in particular, you've got a family that are living in an upturned boat on the beach, and it's very much, they're not even dreaming any bigger than that. Like, yeah, this whole thing that they don't really have any ambitions to kind of do anything or move maybe a couple of hundred yards away and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't think it really delves too much into kind of wider class struggle.
I think that's quite interesting, really, for a person like Amadou Nucci. Do you see a developing of his, I don't know, ambitions? He's somebody who, you know, even this week, his new TV series is premiering on Sky, I believe, and it's a sci-fi comedy, something he's never done before. So he's a guy who's clearly still quite, you know, a decade and a half into his career, no, 2.5 decades into his career, yeah, trying new things. And maybe we don't need to look to him for satire anymore.
Yeah, actually, much of the cast of David Copperfield is in that new.
Hugh Laurie's leading that, isn't he?
Yeah, and a few of the other more minor players whose names evade me. Yeah, I actually did get to see the first episode of that, and let's hope it improves.
Okay. I suppose to wrap up on David Copperfield then, I don't know, Dickens, you know, maybe some people read some of his books at school. Certainly, you know, some of his stories, like The Christmas Carol, has been adapted many times, but his larger novels like this seems to be the preserve of Christmas TV, multi-part miniseries. Is there a reason to go and see this film rather than to go and read the book or see another adaptation?
Yeah, I think it's an incredibly like creative and interesting take on it. There's, he's really created something that's genuinely hilarious in parts and interesting. And it kind of zips by. It's just kind of a lovely warm hug of a film. And I actually find myself quite annoyed afterwards because you think that something like the BAFTAs really should be giving this a little bit of a boost and recognising some, you know, fantastic British performances and work that's gone into this. And I find myself irritated that, like, Bombshell got all of those nominations and something like this was completely overlooked.
You'd think that this would be, like, right up their alley.
Yeah, you would.
I love a period drama.
I think in the end it had a nomination in Best Casting and... But in terms of the on-camera side of things, not so much. Layla, what scores would you give David Copperfield?
In advance, I'd go with a 2. Whilst I was watching it, I was just completely on board. So I'd go with the 5. And then I calmed down a bit, so 4.
Cam, any final comments and scores?
Yeah, I think I'd agree that it's a very sort of warm and kind of comforting film, despite its... like, on paper, it's quite grim. I'm glad that Inucci didn't lose sight of, well, the broader political points of the story when he was making it. While it is the way we were talking about it just now, when it was like the poorer characters are sort of victims of their own making, doesn't make it sound so great.
No.
I thought it was interesting in sort of seeing how it's sort of very, very traditional arguments of wealth corrupting and different, like, kind of take on a rags to riches tale. I thought it was good. I am very fond of Iannucci's works. I'm mainly familiar with Death of Stalin and The Thick of It. So I was looking forward to this. So I would say my anticipation was about a 3. My enjoyment of it was about a 4 because, again, Tilda Swinton on The Warpath Against Donkeys is irresistible. I thought it was a very lovely, lighthearted watch. Good January stuff. And in retrospect, I think a 3, mainly because of the sort of slightness of its politics, when I am used to something a little bit sharper from Inucci, especially off the back of something like The Death of Stalin, which is navigating the collapse of this regime. It felt slight, but I suppose that's fine, and fine is how I feel about it in the end, so I'd say a 3 again.
Okay, well, that is the personal history of David Copperfield in cinemas this week. Also in cinemas this week, up next we have Queen and Slim. While on a forgettable first date, a black couple are pulled over by the police. The situation escalates with sudden and tragic results when the man kills the police officer in self-defence. Terrified and in fear for their lives, the two are forced to go on the run. But the incident is captured on video and goes viral, and the couple unwittingly become a symbol of trauma, terror, grief and pain for people across the country. Whether you're a brother or
whether you're a mother, you stay. Cop killers! Cop killers!
It was self-defence.
We're in the Black Bonnie and Clyde. Feel the city breaking and
everybody shaking up. How are you gonna outrun the police?
We don't have to outrun them. We just have to make sure they don't know where we are.
This here's Kentucky, my friend.
There's a war going on out there, and you welcome this into our home?
Is this y'all?
Yeah, I really gave us something to believe in. We needed that for real.
Let them go!
They got to move Black Panthers. Power to the people.
All we can do is go forward. There is nothing back there for us. Let's just keep going.
A clip from the trailer for Queen and Slim there. So, Campbell, this is the feature debut from Melina Matsoukas, a music video director of Beyoncé's Lemonade, amongst other things, and also the first feature screenplay from Lena Waithe, who people may know as, you know, she wrote a really great episode of Master of None and has appeared on screen as well. Were you excited for this film, and did it pan out well for you?
When I first heard of it, I quite liked the idea of Black Bonnie and Clyde, as it sort of self-describes as. I was mostly familiar with Lena Waithe's work from the Master of None episode she wrote and her performance in that show, both of which I really liked. She sort of fell off my radar, apart from comments she's made in the press, which I guess I'll get back around to. But I was like, sure, this looks interesting. And then I started hearing about the content of the film itself, and my interest sort of started to wither.
Right.
And then upon seeing it, I felt that concern was justified. It's a film that's constantly patting itself on the back for something that it doesn't feel like it's accomplishing very much.
Right.
It doesn't really have the commitment that you'd expect from a film that is readily having characters saying, we're the Black Bonnie and Clyde, because it has this sort of initial act which is portrayed as a revolutionary act, and it's seemed to be billed as such in the trailer, and like the sort of reversal of this sort of stop and search shooting scene that you've seen so many times, this sort of very bold reversal of it. And then it sort of hand-wrings about it for the rest of the movie. And it has this really strange depiction of almost every cop that pops up in the rest of the movie. They're either saints or they're monsters or just negligent, awful, and just completely unrealistic people. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't really seem capable of engaging with its subject matter in any way beyond the broad strokes. And it doesn't help that beyond that, every decision it seems to make from the get-go is sort of just the wrong one. And like the idea that this defense attorney who seems to be the lucid one in a situation that has spiraled out of control, this is Queen played by Jodie Turner-Smith. She's telling Daniel Kaluuya, we have to run, you can't talk to your family because you will make them accomplices, although in the same scene she is a victim at best. She's been shot by this cop. She seems to have a good head on her shoulders and knows what she's doing, and then runs anyway and turns herself into an accomplice while lecturing this other character about it. So it just seems like the very inception of this premise just doesn't really seem to make any emotional sense. You could attribute it to blind panic, but I feel like it just kind of gets off on this wrong foot and just continues down this path. I have a lot of strong feelings about this movie, and so it's going to be quite difficult to espouse all of them without losing my mind. But there's just so many strange notes throughout the whole thing. And in the clip that you heard, this has been bothering me since I've seen it. In the clip that we just heard in the trailer, there's a sample from the song Running Away by The Far Side. This sample is used in maybe one of the worst sex scenes I have seen since Munich. And at least Munich had going for it that it had, you could tell its point. It may have been weird and sweaty, but you knew what the scene was going for. But here, it's just like, it's like they dared to ask, what if it was that, but it didn't mean anything? I'm sorry, it's so crazy. And then on top of all of that, they're using this sample with this sort of very, this very indulgent piano cover track kind of running over it with this intermittent Running Away sample, and then it's intercut with this violent protest.
Yeah.
And it's insane. It's
insane.
I think
that might actually be a gunshot with an orgasm.
it's so crazy.
So bad.
I'm sorry. I don't understand what led them to some of these decisions. Like, they thought they were making this transient political point by saying all this stuff, but a lot of it just comes off like a secondary school kid trying to write poetry. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some really insane lines, like the stuff that they're saying while the talking is off screen, so their mouths are shut, but they're just like very passionately staring into each other's eyes while someone's saying a line like, I want him to show me scars that I never knew I had. And it's like, what does that mean?
Well, Cameron, it looks like you really are losing your mind right before our very eyes right now. Layla, what did you make of this film? Similar to Cam, different?
Pretty similar, if I'm honest. That technique of kind of keeping their faces still with the dialogue just playing over them is so weird. And then they just stop doing it.
they lean on it heavy early on. And then
yeah,
it goes
they're
away.
Really into it, and then they just change their mind. So that was extremely grating. I mean, what I would say for the film is that it is genuinely gorgeous. I mean, there's a scene in the beginning in the diner that looks just like that Edward Hopper painting Nighthawk. There's these long, languid shots going through the deep south, which are just stunning. You know, they're lit so beautifully. Their skin looks incredible. That's about it.
It's like, a lot of it feels like it's best styled as like still photography. The way like it's cut together and it moves just doesn't really mean anything to me. Like there's things like Daniel Kaluuya's having his hair cut at one point in the film, and it cuts to just like these different, very slightly different angles of the same thing happening. It's a very handsome film, but it just, that I don't think that style is much in service of anything. I guess you could say it's a celebration of this sort of black style, and the way that the skin looks on camera, I think, is a thing that we could use more of in Hollywood, because a lot of the time people don't know how to light it. I think it was fine, but I think it wasn't particularly revolutionary here when compared to something like, say, Moonlight, where everyone has this very otherworldly glow. When it's
Moonlight, it is not.
No, absolutely not. But it's like, it feels like a film entirely constructed around that photograph that's on the poster. And it doesn't, like, with them in the garage with the Kaluuya in the velour tracksuit and her in the dress, and they've got the car, and it doesn't really feel like, it feels like it's constructed outwards from there in a way that doesn't really make sense.
I mean, there is a certain power to that image. I mean, it's very rare that we see two such dark-skinned black actors, like, falling in love and being the leads in something. I mean, that, you know, full credit to them.
Is it love, really, though? They seem like they hate each other from beginning to end. They seem like they can't stand each other's company.
Well, yeah, and that kind of speaks to what you mentioned earlier about her character's motivations are, like, deeply annoying, because it's actually just a really old-fashioned portrayal of femininity, of that you're just going to sacrifice everything, even though technically you could just leave now. You've been shot in the leg. Just go to the hospital. There was an incident. Maybe be like, oh, okay, well, he went that way when he actually went the other way. But there's no reason for you to
This probably should have been a legal drama.
Him.
Once they said that she was a defense attorney, it's just like, I don't know, defend him in court or something. He's your tender date. You don't need to, like, throw your life away.
It could have been a very different film. But that picture that's on the poster does play a role in the plot. It's a photograph that's taken of them, and that's one of the key references it makes to Bonnie and Clyde, the fact that a photograph can create a moment, create a whole new moment for a class struggle or any sort of political struggle, and that feeds into how it's this black Bonnie and Clyde film. And unlike maybe you were just saying that about David Copperfield, doesn't feel that it's pushing forward any great statement, or doesn't feel like it's a film that needs to be made right now, this film seems like it very much wants to be a film of the moment, and I wonder, where does it fall down for being that?
Well, I think for one thing, like, if they're Bonnie and Clyde, they're the most passive Bonnie and Clyde ever. I mean, they don't really make any, I mean, after the first decision, which is really her, they don't really do anything. They're sort of, you know, just bouncing around from place to place and kind of reacting to things as they come. I didn't love it, which is pretty apparent. I did love seeing Bakeem Woodbine. I love him. I felt in some ways he was like a perfect embodiment of what was wrong with this film, and that, like, you've got a phenomenal actor like him. You've made him a pimp. You've styled him. He looks incredible. He's wearing some sort of gorgeous, like, custom Gucci, and, you know, he delivers all of his lines really well. But at the end of the day, you're still putting Bakeem Woodbine as a pimp again. Like, can't we do something different with someone of his caliber?
Also, I feel like his character is a route into another problem I had with the film, in that it kind of feels like it hates women. A lot of the time, like, Queen never really comes off as much more than, like, a sort of this humorless scold. She's constantly lecturing. But, like, maybe it's too little too late. She's rarely given moments where she gets to have charm. I suppose that's not the most important thing, but then when you look at, when you examine it alongside Bakeem Woodbine's character, who she admits is responsible for a great trauma in her life, and then also you see him smacking around, like, other women, and then she's just, then the very next scene she's just like, all right, bye, cool, and she's just completely fine with it. And it just seems like the film is as well. It doesn't really interrogate anything about his character, not at least not while he's on screen, but then even when it's discussed, it's sort of just, like, hand waved away.
Yeah, just a quick, oh no, he's got PTSD, it's fine.
Everything's fine.
I have a feeling I know what's coming, but Campbell, what scores would you give this?
I think for an anticipation 2, it was probably at about a 3, and then I started hearing things. Enjoyment, I'm 1. I thought I had a grip on it while it was still in its early stages, and then they encounter the sort of cowboy hat wearing good cop character, and it just completely just went downhill and stayed there for me. In retrospect, one, I probably couldn't go lower than that if I tried, but...
Layla?
I really liked Lena Waithe's Thanksgiving episode of Marston and of None, so I was, and I loved Daniel Kaluuya, so I was probably at a 4 watching it, at a 3, and I ended up at a 1. It actually took a moment for me afterwards to sit down and really think about what I'd saw, for me to appreciate how many levels it fails at.
So a lot of decisions made, all of them wrong.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, that's the last word on Queen and Slim. That's in cinemas this week, as is David Copperfield. Up next, we have Film Club, which is a restoration that's hitting cinemas this month as well. It is The Holy Mountain.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Part funded by John Lennon, The Holy Mountain is Alejandro Jodorowsky's most ambitious film. It's a sprawling phantasmagoria of sacrilegious visual excess and existential yearning, which the New York Times described as dazzling. It's had a 4K restoration, it's in certain cinemas and coming out on Blu-ray as well. Let's hear a clip.
Nothing in your education or experience can have prepared you for this film. Alejandro Jodorowsky's The Holy Mountain. The Holy Mountain is a film completely outside the entire tradition of motion picture art. It is outside the tradition of modern theater.
A bit of the trailer of The Holy Mountain there. I love those retro trailers. So, Campbell, you unfortunately have to leave us a little early today from the pod recording. Was this your first Jodorowsky experience, and was it a good trip?
It was. I think I'm still figuring that out, whether I fully enjoyed the trip or not. But just from the moment that the sort of messianic figure appears, and I was very ready to go on this sort of acid trip, the visuals I thought were incredible, and I'm still sort of trying to pass together the sort of overall allegory of it, because it's throwing a lot of either very blunt or very wild symbolism at you in every scene. But if anything, I loved the craft of it, and I just appreciated the boldness of it all. The machine orgasm section was a lot.
Thank you very much, Cam.
And on that note,
thank you for joining us this week, Cam. We'll check in with you soon, make sure that you're okay after watching both Queen and Slim and The Holy Mountain in 1 week.
I'm just going to be processing all of this for a while. Anyway, thanks for having me on.
Layla, it really is a very strange film. Luckily, we're not going to force ourselves into explaining it before we leave today, because otherwise we'll be here a long time. But I did get a very good tweet from one of our listeners, Dave Liang of the Shanghai Restoration Project band. He said that in Holy Mountain, the kernel of what makes Jodorowsky great is there, but like many artists in their youth, it's still a bit unrefined. His last two movies, most recent movies, The Dance of Reality and Endless Poetry, are genius works of art. They're two films that I completely missed on release. They're more recent. He had a long period in the back half of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, where he only made one or two films. Mm-hmm. Most of his reputation rests on these 70s trips. Layla, have you seen these before? Is this a new one for you?
I have seen this before in, I think, the perfect way to see it. For when I was about 23, I went to a very pretentious party and they were projecting it on all of the walls and it was perfect. I highly, highly recommend it for that. Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to quantify something like this in terms of good or bad. It's kind of got this great breakneck speed, and so like it doesn't actually let you sit with things for very long. So, you know, if you're not interested in this imagery, here's another one. All mm-hmm. kind of evolving along the same things of, you know, colonialism and Christ and the commodification of Christ and stuff like that. A lot of it's quite grotesque, so I wouldn't recommend trying to eat a snack whilst you watch it, as I found out to my detriment.
Unless it's a face of Christ.
Yeah, which, yeah, delicious. Things,
which, yeah.
Which, if only I'd known. yeah, I know there's some really great little bits in here. I particularly loved when the Inca iguanas are colonized by the Spanish bullfrogs and then they explode. but as it went on, I do think a lot of the kind of endless sex objects of women, and there's one who like really enjoys getting raped near the beginning, and there's kind of it starts to get a little bit puerile in that department, and I did feel that this is not a person who likes women.
Right.
Towards the end there's just some kind of strange humping of a mountain for no reason, and he does seem to always go to that with any of the kind of female characters that emerge. So I'm looking forward to seeing some more of his work, because, you know, filmmakers do mature at the time, and this did feel like, in many respects, the work of quite a young man.
Yes.
But, you know, worth the 2 hours if you have it.
And so very of its time in terms of an art movie that could become a cult film.
Yeah.
So this film and his previous film, El Topo, which is an acid western, and similarly goes off the rails and goes purely surreal in its succession of imagery and nudity and sacrilegious symbolism. They were both big on the midnight movie circuit, and that's where John Lennon and George Harrison saw his films, and that's when John Lennon said to Alan Klein, head of Apple Co., we need to fund this guy's next movie.
It's like, yeah.
Could you imagine if, like, what would the equivalent today be? There's not even an equivalent filmmaker today, but can you imagine if Chris Martin said, I'm going to fund the next film by this exploitative edgelord filmmaker? I don't know.
Yeah, no, it does to kind of speak to George Harrison and John Lennon as you know, depending on which Beatle you prefer, that, you know, George Harrison funded Monty Python and John Lennon funded this.
Yes.
Not to give anything away, but one of the Monty Python films has a very similar ending to this as well.
It really does. That's very true, actually. There's something about how Alejandro Jodorowsky is so happy to center himself in these films. Mm-hmm. And not just himself. If you watch El Topo, he plays the main character, who's a spaghetti western type figure, and he's accompanied by a mostly naked young boy who's played by his own son. And sure. I do wonder, Brontis Jodorowsky is now an actor. He showed up very recently in the most recent Fantastic Beasts movie, of all things. And it's weird to think, I saw you very naked before you were the age of consent.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of quite surprising child nudity.
Yes.
That you probably wouldn't be able to go with now. There's a lot of stuff with one of the disabled characters that also, thankfully, you would not be able to get away with now.
Again, but, very of its time.
Yes.
And he's a filmmaker.
Which is us being generous, because some of it is, you know, I'm pretty sure even the 70s it wasn't really considered
perhaps
okay
not
to do that.
But certainly as a visual filmmaker, you will see imagery. It's like Louis Buñuel,
yeah,
or you know, actual art cinema, where you are seeing surreal artwork come to life.
Indeed.
And take strange turns that you're not expecting. And maybe it would be best watched if you're under the influence of something. Certainly, they apparently were under the influence on set at various points,
yeah,
improvising this film. But I don't know. I find Jodorowsky sometimes more interesting to read about than to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be in a very specific mood. for this sort of thing.
You do, but thankfully, I don't think it necessarily needs to be watched in one sitting. I think you can kind of take three or four things if you kind of get tired of it, because there's no real thread throughout that you have to particularly cling on to.
Mm-hmm. There's a really good wealth of writing out there about this film, so some of which I think speaks to how the 70s avant-garde experimental countercultural cinema movement has been reappraised over the years. There's a piece on Vice Canada I remember reading a few years ago that I dug out again about watching this film with your mum.
Yeah.
And it's like, of course, that's such a Vice article, circa 2006, where it's taking a piece of extreme cinema and watching it with a parent. But it's true, this sort of cinema has, in a way, become something that's projected at hipster parties,
yes.
Or it's a sort of gotcha where you sit someone down and watch what their reaction is, or you go to a late night screening. But maybe this re-release, you know, Arrow Films have put out his first three films in new restorations. Maybe it is time to go back and see what maybe we missed, maybe what we can take from this.
Yeah, I think it would make a fantastic second or third date film.
Just,
you know, something to, you know, talk about afterwards. There's plenty that's there, and it kind of zips along quite nicely that you can kind of give it, you know, 75% of your attention and kind of be checking on the person that you're with. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly worth seeing.
And you will go deeper?
I fear going deeper, but I will give it a go.
Who knows if you'll ever come back. But anyway, listeners, that is The Holy Mountain. Let us know what you think if you do drop that film at any point soon, or if you have any other feelings on Alejandro Jodorowsky. I would make a very quick plug. When he wasn't making films, he became a very prolific comic writer in France in the 1980s, and his work has been republished in the last 10 years or so, and it's all amazing. Art by Jean Giraud, known as Mobius, one of the best artist there is. That's in some ways, I think, a better representation of his vision than his films, but I might be saying something quite controversial there. Anyway, let us know what you think about The Holy Mountain, Jodorowsky's films, or either of the new releases this week at the usual channels. That is at Truth and Movies on Twitter, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com via email, or at the comments section at lwlies.com/podcast. So, new releases next week are The Lighthouse, the new film by Robert Eggers, who you may know from The Witch. We have Richard Jewell from a new filmmaker called Clint Eastwood. And in Film Club, we have another weird movie from the 70s, this time the Czech film Valerie and Her Week of Wonders, which the second run DVD legends are putting out. Let us know what you think of that at the usual channels. Layla, thank you so much for joining me this week.
Thank you for having me.
And Cam as well. I'm Michael Leader, and as always, this has been a 7 Digital production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.